Hello Vanessa Media is now available on rumble.com/HelloVanessaMedia, youtube.com/HelloVanessaMedia, all of the podcasting platforms that you love to listen to podcasts on LinkedIn, and of course, HelloVanessaMedia.com. And you can sign up for a newsletter on HelloVanessaMedia.com/info. Hi, my name is Vanessa Leck, and today's video is going to be part two of the video that I did earlier today about the Alexandria, Louisiana Veterans Affairs Medical Center, which I will share here, where basically I had an employee talking smack to me earlier today on the telephone, which I quite frankly wasn't expecting. You would think that these people would know better by now than to pick me as the person they're going to talk smack to. And I don't know what the laws are, but I am getting to the point where I've decided I don't have time right now nor the energy to care to do this. But I'm going to start looking into what the laws are about recording these calls, especially if I find out tomorrow, because somebody's going to be calling me about this, that this call wasn't in fact recorded. I have no idea. I know there's a lot of different laws. I know some states you can, you can't, you know, some people have to give consent, some people don't. With it being a federal facility and federal employees, I don't know if there's different laws or I have no idea. I have no idea how it works at all. But, you know, I do wonder, and this is the second time I've had an employee talking smack to me from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs in this region of the country, Louisiana, since I have been visiting here and with the VA as well and, you know, going there for services and whatnot. And so, you know, the first time the call was not recorded and they were not practicing recording the calls at that time. Now they are supposed to be recorded according to what I've been told by, you know, the automated machine saying they're now recording them. If you look at my White House hotline video, you'll see a while ago, I made that announcement because of, it was a whole saga. You can just check that video out. So anyways, I decided to make this a little bit more educational, which all my videos are pretty educational, I think, actually. And I decided to pull up a different website than the one I had earlier about the Alexandria VA Medical Center. But before I go ahead and kind of get into that, I'm actually going to talk a little bit more about updates of exactly what happened earlier today, which I think is pretty interesting. All right. So, okay. So basically, earlier today, after I finished my other live video, which I literally did right after I dealt with this VA employee that was talking smack to me on the phone, I made another phone call and basically was lobbying Congress about a congressional office about pharmacy blocking that's occurring at a national level within the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And I'm going to go ahead and bring up that banner, and I'm actually going to edit the banner while I'm at it. Okay. All right. There's the banner. So VHA stands for Veterans Health Administration. Yeah, that's right. VHA Pharmacy Handbook 1108.05, page 19, paragraph K is what I was told by the Alexandria, Louisiana Veterans Affairs Medical Center pharmacist, one of the supervisors or whatever. It is, I was able to confirm with the congressional office, a national policy they've created, which they interpret in a self-serving way for these managers to keep more lockdown control of the veterans, military veterans that are eligible for services there, to where they cannot receive any kind of anything from the pharmacy that could possibly be received from a pharmacy, period, unless it's being prescribed by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs employee prescribers or the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs in-network community care, which is basically the insurance network that's affiliated with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. So if it's not coming from those two places, veterans don't even have a chance to try to get the prescriptions filled. But then also, I found out today that it's even more complicated than that. So like, if, you know, John Doe veteran gets a prescription from Jane Doe prescriber employee at the VA, like that prescription can still be potentially denied. And it has to do like whether or not it's in their formulary, I think is the word. This is really weird because I'm not really up on this. I'm not a pharmacist, okay? I just learned about this stuff today. And then like, basically it sounds like stuff can be potentially like denied even after a VA prescriber prescribes it. And so the point I'm making is there's a lot of pharmacy blocking going on here, and it's really challenging to access the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs pharmacy, even if you're an eligible veteran, I am learning. Like, it's ridiculous. And I'm not talking about like addictive drugs or narcotics or like controlled substances or drugs that are high risk for diversion. No, I'm talking about like anything. My husband made a joke that the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs would probably make it hard to just get an ibuprofen from their pharmacy. And I think he is absolutely right because it's just outrageous the roadblocks they have in place to make it to where it's very inaccessible, the pharmacy is in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And this is a really life or death issue for some veterans. I mean, there are some veterans out there that have terminal illnesses and, you know, are going, there are people out there going and trying to get second opinions or trying to get medical care outside the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs for various medical reasons. And, you know, they're trying to access the pharmacy to obtain life-saving or life-extending prescriptions, and they're being denied. I mean, it's just absolutely outrageous. And in order to even attempt to get it approved, if it came from the outside, you got to bring like your whole medical file, basically, of the progress notes is what I was told. God, by the VA people. And then like the prescription that was written. And then it sounds like you got to beg, plead, and borrow practically to try to get one of these VA prescribers to sign off on it. And then it may or may not be approved by the pharmacy. I mean, it's just outrageous. It really is, in my opinion. And so fortunately, the congressional office I'm working with is the friendliest congressional office I've ever come into contact with at all. The best of following up, the most committed. And they did say that they would send this to the person that deals with their policy. And I suppose that person deals with the Veterans Affairs policy, specifically legislative matters. And, you know, I'm not holding my breath that anything's going to change overnight really related to this dysfunctional policy that needs to change and stop being interpreted this way. But I believe that if I and others continue to speak out about these issues, and, you know, I'm filing and reporting formally through the proper channels, in addition to doing these podcasts and videos, in hopes of bringing about some real change, because clearly it's needed. You know, I have just, in my limited contact with the VA recently, identified so many red flag issues. It's unreal. And, you know, I've spent more time dealing with the VA drama than actually receiving services from the VA in any capacity. I mean, you would think I'm there every day the way I talk about this organization, but no, that's just the way that they are capable of filling up your life with the runaround and the drama and all of that stuff. That's what's happening here. And so, you know, when I worked at the VA, I worked at the VA for approximately 2 years, and then I spent, oh my God, how many years after that? Like upwards of almost 5 years fighting with the VA about the whistleblower retaliation that I endured because of management misconduct that I reported. I mean, it was just really outrageous. And it's the same dysfunctional civil service system allowed that to prevail. And that allows a lot of these dysfunctional people to continue to stay in the organization, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And so it's a really big problem. Because, you know, people talk about this current civil service system, which my understanding is was created in the 1970s to protect against basically political favoritism, which happens anyways, by the way, in the federal government still. But it really backfired, and I think it had really good intentions, but it really backfired. And so a person can be a really horrible person, a really horrible employee, and they can and will stay inside these civil service system type jobs in the federal government for decades at the on the taxpayer's dime. And I'm acutely aware of this at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. It's happening constantly. It's happening right now. They're, you know, they transfer around managers they don't want to deal with to other facilities that are predatory. Just they don't have to deal with them, and it becomes somebody else's problem, essentially. Obviously, this isn't good for the American taxpayers. Obviously, this isn't good for the military community, but it's happening all the time. And this person I dealt with on the phone, you know, I refuse to tolerate just bad behavior from anyone at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Like, I'm not going to tolerate it, because if they're not doing it to me, they're doing it to other people that likely can't even advocate for themselves or don't know how. And it has just been such an issue with the VA through my interactions with the VA in so many different ways. You don't even know. There are exceptional people that work there that I'm sure are just as tortured as I am by the VA drama. But the VA is really big issue with retaining high quality people because of its drama, and also recruiting high quality people because of the drama that is very well known by many, but not all, obviously. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. All right, so this is the Alexandria Veterans Affairs Medical Center screen here. And this is the new va.gov website, which obviously looks a lot cleaner, in my opinion, than the older websites, which is the eBenefits website. And that one's supposedly supposed to be being phased out, is what the rumor has it. That's not official, but that's what I'm hearing. I keep hearing that. And I do think it's true, because they've taken a lot of stuff, it looks like. Of course, there's just so much stuff on these websites, and moved it from eBenefits to like the va.gov website. I even saw that as recently as tonight. So this is obviously the location of the big VA, is what I call it. It's the parent VA of all the smaller VAs that surround it in the area, to the best of my knowledge. And they have a website, and it really sucks. So I'm not even gonna bother showing you that. But of course, it has like all this stuff. It's hospital, so it has all the hospital stuff that a hospital would have. And as of, this is where it gets interesting. So these are the new patient wait times. And I think I'm not going to point out which one, but I know for sure some of the information is accurate, but I think it's inaccurate if they're trying to say that current patients aren't waiting just as long as new patients for new appointments. So maybe they should rephrase that as new appointment wait times, not new patients. But anyhow, I'm not going to debate that here. So as of May 31st, which is just a week ago, this was updated. I'm really happy to see that they're required to post this information publicly. If you know anything about the VA, then you'll know about the waitlist scandals of Phoenix, Arizona, that occurred many years ago, around 2014, roughly, was the time frame that news broke. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google it. It'll come right up. So there is a lot of focus on that for good reason. During that scandal, it was revealed that managers were allegedly manipulating data to make it look like there were less wait times when there were actually really long wait times. And that is due, my understanding is, to performance measures set out by Congress. Those performance measures are typically attached to bonus money. And my experience with my direct experience with VA management is that these managers will do anything for a dollar at the VA. Okay. I mean, that's my direct experience from working there. So yeah, nothing surprises me. I don't have any direct knowledge of the Phoenix, Arizona scandal. Thank you, Jesus. I did not have the misfortune of working at that place. Okay. I think my luck was bad enough, but, yeah, that's just from kind of overview of the news broadcast, countless news broadcasts. Whoops, my drink fell. Countless news broadcasts that were done during that time. Anyway, so primary care, they're saying like 16 days. And then you have some like dermatology 0 days. I guess they're really not popular over there is the impression I'm getting. I'm kind of surprised that nobody has like a bunch of skin issues because I think that people would. The longest wait is optometry. So eye doctor, 109 days. So clearly a lot of people got eye problems over there. And then it just becomes a mixed bag from there. You know what I mean? Like it's all over the place. Oh, there it is. Existing patient wait times. Oh, there we go. Okay. So yeah, this is showing back. It looks like what I know to be accurate information with my direct experiences, which keep in mind, I'm not going to all these departments. So I don't know about every single one, but you know, I'm familiar with a little bit. All right. So the veteran reported satisfaction scores are reported as of March 5th, 2021. I am also happy that this is public information. However, I am concerned about the accuracy of these scores because, as you know, if you've been following my videos, I had surveys sent to me, digital and physical. I covered that online on my broadcast. And, you know, if I would have just submitted that and not be able to write a statement, which I did, it would have been not accurately reflective of my actual experiences with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And I mean, there was many questions I couldn't answer because I couldn't remember because they were just so mundane and not memorable. They just weren't things I'd ever remember about at all. Like I'd have no reason to store that away in my memory. So that was another thing. And on the digital survey, I couldn't write anything. On the physical survey, I could type something up and mail it in. So that's what I did. So I really am skeptical of these ratings. And as you can see, this is what it says. Percentage of veterans who say they usually or always get an appointment when they need care right away. So primary care at this location, Alexandria, Louisiana Veterans Affairs Medical Center, 79%. Specialty care at this location, 76%. Routine care appointments, percentage of veterans who say they usually or always get an appointment when they need it. Primary care, 83%. Specialty care, 93%. So maybe that's the case, but I think also it's not showing like how happy people are with like what's going on. You know what I mean? With like customer service. God, that would be a great survey. That would be a great survey to be showing publicly. How are you getting treated when people pick up the phone? Anybody talking smack to you? Because I think that would be not such great ratings, I suspect. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and remove that. What were the other things I wanted to cover? I like had a whole list. I'm trying to remember everything right now. But I did talk, as I mentioned earlier today, I did speak with the White House hotline. They're just such nice people on that hotline. I just cannot get over it. Like 99% of the people are just the nicest people you'd ever want to speak with. And they're just so they're just great. They're really great people. I just don't know how the VA figured out how to hire and retain such great people because it's just not like the VA to do such a thing at all. I don't know how they pulled it off at all. And their phone menu doesn't suck. And I said I was going to do a phone menu video. Oh man, I don't have the time for that these days. But one of these days, I'm probably going to get to it. Maybe they'll fix the phone menus by the time I get to it. That'd be great. So then I can have one less thing to complain about on these broadcasts. But yeah, so I sent a message about getting talked smack to by this VA employee today to one department as well as the advocate department, the patient advocate department. And the email system that I talk about frequently, secure messaging, is through My Healthy Vet, but can also be accessed through eBenefits, but can also be accessed through VA.gov. Yeah, because that's not confusing at all. But that's the reality of it. And the sites are regularly down. If you've looked at my tech video playlist about the VA, you'll know all about that. It's on YouTube. But I've also posted the same videos on Rumble. You just have to kind of scroll down to see it. And obviously, there's podcasts to listen to. But there's a lot of visuals in my videos. So you know, be benefited if you want to see the visuals to look at the videos. Otherwise, you can just listen. I don't care. Anyways, and so you know, the websites are frequently down. The email system is super glitchy. Today, I was trying to respond to emails and send emails to the VA people, and they were not sending. They frequently, if you type up an email and click send, it'll say it's sent, but it never sent. And it may never not even saved it. And so you'd have to retype up the email again to resend it. So what I've learned to do is to copy and paste the whole email and then to repaste as many times as I need to resend it. Because it won't send, it'll end up in the drafts folder. Then you'll have to resend it, or you'll have to recopy paste in the drafts folder and then resend it. I mean, I've had to do this upwards of like 5 times over here, guys. Okay, gals. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So it's a very glitchy system. Again, this organization is investing billions with a B, billions of dollars of tax money, and yet cannot figure out how to get an email system to work properly. And it just amazes me because like I am just like a little business owner. Like I just have like a little company. Like it's just me and whoever, other companies I hire on to assist with different types of work. And yeah, even I can figure out email. I can figure out a website. I can figure out all these things, software. So like, why is it the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs with their multi-billion-dollar budget cannot figure out email, cannot figure out a website, cannot figure out, you know, software? Like, how is that even possible? It's like the more money you give these people, the more dysfunctional they get. It's just absolutely boggles my mind. It really does. And then, you know, that employee that was talking smack to me earlier, I forgot, you know, because my mind was so blown by that whole interaction that, you know, the person was saying, when I asked them to email some information that was being discussed, that they gave me a huge attitude and they're like, oh, I don't use my healthy vet. Like, I don't use email. They're basically like communicating, like, I don't use technology. Okay, keep in mind, they're an employee of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, an organization that is spending billions of dollars on technology. Yet they have employees, and this is not the first damn time I've heard of something like this from one of their employees, given their veterans' attitudes and bad attitudes and saying like, oh, I don't use that technology. I don't use that system. But that's a part of your job. Like, that's a part of your competency in that job, in that organization, is to learn how to use technology that your organization is paying billions of dollars to implement. Okay. Rather unsuccessfully, let's be honest. I mean, it's just a mess, a hot mess, a pile of steaming mess, but whatever the case, it's still a multi-billion dollar endeavor. You know, it's like, gee, why don't we invest some energy and figure out how to use it, you know? And that's the problem. Like, you need to have people all in when you work at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. You really do, in order for it to work, because it's just a mess over there. And, you know, I remember when I went to work at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, it was something I'd worked towards for years. Like, the position I held was a healthcare type position. And I'd worked for years to obtain the necessary credentials just to qualify for that position. And I was so excited. For me, it was an honor to be able to work with the military community. And of course, it's a mixed bag, you know, of who you're, you know, and how you're working every day and stuff. But it was an honor for me. And I was totally invested in it. And being a part of the military community myself and being a military veteran, for me, I was eager to learn as much as I could about the organization and all of its different branches, because I'm like, I can help other, you know, veterans and the people in the military community. And then I can also help myself, and I'm going to learn so much. And it's so great. And I was like, so excited and so invested. But I frequently found that my enthusiasm was not shared by most of the VA employees that I came into contact with whatsoever. And instead, quite the opposite was true. There was no sense of urgency from a number of the employees to do their jobs so that, you know, the military community could be served and the people that are trying to help them could also be served as well, because that's necessary for them to be supported in their work. And the lack of productivity and the high level of dysfunction, it was awful. It was just absolutely awful when I worked there. Like, I just couldn't even handle it. It was so awful. And then of course the misconduct and then the whistleblower retaliation. I mean, it's just so much to deal with. And after I quit in winter 2015, my understanding is things just got a lot worse after that, in always possible. And it's hard to imagine things could get worse, because when I worked at the VA, it was really, 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 really bad. And I can't imagine it getting worse, but it did. It did. It's well reported in the news. It's well reported by the U.S. Department of Veterans Office of Inspector General, which is super, let's put that banner up. Which is super independent of the VA, fortunately. Thank you, Jesus. And so they are a very reliable source of information, I've come to realize, because they're just keeping it super real, you know? And so that's really nice. But anyhow, I think I've covered everything. I'm supposed to be getting a phone call about the person that talks smack to me today, tomorrow. I'm obviously covering this in real time, because after my community care medical referral was denied a while ago, it's been a few months, I think now, maybe, I forget how long. Anyways, that obviously sprung me into action and motivated me to really publicly advocate for change, because, you know, there's a lot of veterans I've encountered through the years who were bitter and angry, and I couldn't understand why. I understand why now. Like, there's no confusion in my mind whatsoever about why they were bitter and why they were angry about the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Like, I totally get it now and have complete empathy and compassion for all of those people. But you know, the reality is, like, sitting around and just complaining to our friends and our long-suffering family members and spouses really isn't enough to effect change. It really requires us to pick up the phone, to pick up a device, to communicate verbally, to communicate electronically to our congressional representatives, to advocate and demand change of policy and of law, to where the things that are happening that are bad at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs are forced to change, which is how we have the new legislation that we've had, like the 2017 Accountability Act, which I think could be much improved by removing the civil service system, to be completely frank with you, by the 2018 VA Mission Act, I believe it's called. It might be off right now because I'm really kind of getting tired. By the Deborah Sampson Act that was recently passed. The reason that there's a focus on women's health care now is because of that. So, you know, the change is possible, but it takes us really advocating. You know, I could be complaining just to my husband about all these issues, which let me tell you, he's heard about plenty daily for years now. But instead I'm broadcasting it because it needs to be broadcast. You know, it's just reality of it. And, you know, we all can do different things to really advocate for change publicly and in our communities and in Congress to force change. And I really hope that I'm able to affect change in, like, this pharmacy blocking thing that I mentioned earlier. And I'll put that back up on the screen. VHA Pharmacy Handbook 1108.05, page 19, paragraph K, that I don't believe is being interpreted correctly. Not a lawyer, didn't go to law school, but I believe. Anyways, about, you know, blocking access to the pharmacy, I hope that's something that I can affect change with. And because the reality is, what the VA doesn't want you to know, their management, is that, like, I really truly believe that, like, they're, most of these people are just, like, super self-serving. Like, I don't know when it happened, but it's definitely been happening throughout my whole life. But there's just a mentality to make decisions and make policies that serve VA managers and not the military community's best interest. And that's why I did that one video. You may have seen it, and it says something like, who was the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs designed for exactly? Because originally, if you look at the history all the way back, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, it was designed for military veterans that needed various types of assistance, social service assistance, as well as medical assistance. And there were lines of military veterans that had returned from like wars and combat, and they were in line for like a soup kitchen because they were starving and needed to eat. And it was such a problem that they created the Veterans Affairs, whatever they called it back in the day, department essentially to help them and to give them whatever, you know, whatever they needed basically to live and survive and not be in the soup line essentially. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, do your homework and start researching. You'll know that I'm telling the truth. Anyways, and so like that's what the VA was designed for. But at some point it got way off track and it has become this machine sent from hell that is just making life very difficult for members of the military community at times, as well as the people that try to serve them that work there that are honest and not like bad people, you know, terrorizing other people and harassing other people at work and whatnot. Okay, so 31 minutes and 8 seconds. That's the video, guys. That's the podcast today. So I wish you all the best. Don't forget, rumble.com/HelloVanessaMedia, subscribe. Now available also on youtube.com/HelloVanessaMedia, subscribe. All podcasting platforms, you can follow there on LinkedIn if you're there. And HelloVanessaMedia.com and HelloVanessaMedia.com/info. There's an email list. I wish you all the best. Bye.